from the Mercy One Studio. Making it personal with Bishop William Joneson on Iowa Catholic Radio and iowacatholicradio.com.
Good morning. Welcome to Making It Personal with Bishop Joneson. Absent again, my co-host, Kelly Mesher-Collins of the Diocese of Des Moines. Today, we're going to visit with Tom Chapman, a familiar voice to Iowa Catholic Radio listeners and the Spirit Catholic Radio Network. He is the executive director of the Iowa Catholic Conference in the thick of the legislative season. And so we'll get an update what's going on at the Capitol. But as we do on this Friday, the 26th, I'm so looking forward to finally getting to celebrate Mass at the Gem of the Prairie, St. Patrick's Church in Imogene. We're celebrating our Chrism Mass, the annual consecration of the oils, the holy oils that are used in the sacraments, and the opportunity for our diocesan priests to renew their commitment to their priestly promises. So it'll be a gathering in a great spot, in one of those splendid churches of our diocese. And I finally get the chance to pray there, and then perhaps we'll see how things are going. If all goes well, we might have to quench our thirst afterwards at the Emerald Isle and just pay a pastoral visit to the good people there in Imogene. So that'll be a special grace for me and to be with the priests who will be joining us, and then those oils being distributed throughout the diocese in anticipation of the Easter Vigil next week as we enter into Holy Week. Was grateful for the chance to celebrate a memorial mass commemorating all the victims of COVID-19 at Sacred Heart in West Des Moines this past Monday night, that bilingual liturgy that we celebrated, and lifting up those who have passed on in that way, entrusting them to the care of God. And of course, St. Joseph, patron of the dying, that he helps to carry them and bring them out of exile into the bosom of the Father. So we continue to do that. And that was, I think, a great moment of consolation and spirit for our people. We think about what things are going on in the Universal Church. We're a little bit attentive and with some measure of concern to the German Synod, the Synodal Way, that term of Pope Francis, that we want to accompany each other as members of the Church on our pilgrim way and to break bread with each other. But it seems that the German Church, as it looks about matters of discipline and marriage, ordination and eligibility for orders, clerical celibacy, and various matters in sexual ethics, proposes some prospective challenges that the communion that we know as a universal church would be stretched in tension. And so I think we pray that the Holy Spirit speaks to the hearts of the church fathers in Germany, and of course the Vatican coming forward to just remind us and to offer that pastoral word, as there were some who were interpreting some of our Holy Father's remarks, supporting the possibility of domestic benefits for couples or family members who might be together. We could even think of a more senior parent living with an adult daughter or son, the possibility that they might share health benefits and things certainly makes sense in terms of social justice and everything else. But in terms of those who are united in a so-called same-sex bond, that those who have homosexual orientation, that they receive the assistance they need, that they can live out God's will in a beautiful way in their lives, to be accorded with respect, compassion, and sensitivity, and never to be victims of unjust discrimination in their regard, to avoid this as our Catechism of the Catholic Church. But this point of clarification, as in some quarters there was the proposal to offer a blessing, a kind of sacramental, rather than the kind of, you know, sacramental, the sacrament of marriage between a man and a woman, but to at least take into that pastoral situation. We bless persons, but we cannot bless unions where people who are united sexually and outside the context of God's intention for holy marriage. And so I think the response to the question that came forward, that we look at human relationships ordered to both express and receive the good that is communicated in a blessing. And so bonds between a man and a woman that are open to the transmission of life, but other sorts of partnerships, we could think of couples who are cohabiting and otherwise who maybe are getting there, but that the blessing of same-sex unions was something that is not possible. The Church does not see her empowered by Christ to be able to offer this particular grace. And so it's not trying to exclude or alienate persons who find themselves within the LGBTQ community, but to simply declare what God's intention and wisdom as he entrusts to the church, the power to bring forth the treasury of graces, but also the respect and the recognition of the call to conversion and unity and grace and integrity of life. So just a little reflection there. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back with Tom Chapman of the Iowa Catholic Conference. Thank you for listening to Making It Personal with Bishop Johnson.
Thank you, Big Red Q Quick Print, for underwriting the Sports Report. Family owned and operated since 1980, Big Red Q Quick Print is a full service print shop ready to help you with all your printing needs with speed and accuracy. Forms, manuals, brochures, letterhead, envelopes, business cards, custom invitations, design, and bindery. Big Red Q Quick Print, located across from Merle Hay Mall. Online at bigredq-desmoines.com. Big Red Q Quick Print. We make printing easy.
Support for Iowa Catholic Radio and Dowling Catholic Sports is provided in part by Ashworth Vision Clinic. With two licensed optometrists, Barbara Sheets, a Dowling graduate, and Dr. Craig Harper, the Ashworth Vision Clinic team provides complete eye exams, contact lenses, glasses, glaucoma testing, and pre- and post-operative care. Ashworth Vision Clinic is located at 60th and Ashworth in West Des Moines. 515-440-4610 or online, ashworthvision.com.
Welcome back. This is Bishop William Johnson of the Diocese of Des Moines, absent my co-host Kelly Mesher Collins for one more week here, and you're listening to Make It Personal. On today's show, we're visiting with Tom Chapman, Executive Director of the Iowa Catholic Conference, to give us an update. Is this kind of the busy season and the thick of it at the Iowa Capitol as the legislature continues to do what they do? But first, Tom, you know, You were once chancellor of the Diocese of Des Moines. Now you're executive director of the Iowa Catholic Conference. And is it correct this year you are the head of Catholic Conference organizations throughout the U.S.?
Oh, yeah, that's right. I'm currently serving as the president of the National Association of State Catholic Conference Directors. And so it's a membership group. That's not a it's you know how it is when you're in a membership group. Somebody's got to keep doing the work to keep the membership going and serve them. So that's the role I get to take for the next couple of years.
Do you feel that you have your voice is being heard in venues that maybe wouldn't normally be, but on a national level?
Well, I think there's a relationship with the United States Bishops Conference, you know, with the president of the association. And so we do get to talk to their lobbyist team fairly frequently. And so I think some of that voice is heard. But really, as an organization, of course, we respond to our own bishops. And so our group does not take any positions on anything. You know, it's more of a support organization for all of us, because there's really only about 40 people in the country that do what we do. And so we do stay in very good touch with each other. In fact, we had a meeting yesterday on Zoom with our membership and getting ready to meet hopefully on our usual summer meeting later this year and get back together on that. So it's a great support for other people.
That's good. And, you know, you talk about the principal subsidiary and you're responding to the local shepherds, the bishops of various dioceses, but that is coordinated. And for Iowa, the four dioceses, the bishops interacting with you very much and relying on your insider's view of things and the kind of counsel you give, so that we aren't just kind of out there as independent operators, but even obviously using our own practical wisdom. So when the question of vaccines came up, you know, interfacing with the USCCB and the Vatican, but then issuing our statement on behalf of the people of Iowa and the province of Iowa. Now, you and your wife, Paulette, who is at St. John and Paul in Altoona, right? She's involved with faith formation there. Is that correct?
Yep, that's right. Yep, she's been out there for several years and has worked in different parishes in the diocese. So they're doing a lot of good things out there.
Did you both kind of at some point in your lives see this as part of your vocational calling to be directly involved in service to the church? Or is that something that kind of emerged?
You know, it's funny you ask that. Certainly for Paulette, I think this is something she really wanted to do for a long time. I mean, she was trained in theology at Briarcliff in Sioux City, Franciscan School, and got her master's from Notre Dame in theology. And so early on, you know, we met in Sioux City. So early on, we knew this was her path. I actually started out in TV news a long time ago and worked in communications. And so when we came to Des Moines, we moved here because Paulette got a job at Sacred Heart 30 years ago. And so she got tired of seeing me lounge around the pool, you know, at our apartment complex. And she said, you better go find a job. Well, actually, the current chancellor at the time and head of Catholic Charities, Larry Brahenny, I knew him through his daughter, who was Paulette's roommate, and so they were hiring a communications director. So that came together after a period of some time. You know how fast the diocese does their hiring process. But so I started with the diocese in 1990 and never looked back. And no, I never thought that I would work for the church. I mean, we were a faithful family, and I was one of those kids who went to CCD every week, you know, that sort of thing. But I never really thought I would land with the church. But I'm really glad it worked out the way it did for me.
And we are grateful because you're so good at what you do. And I think, you know, a man is respected on both sides of the aisle because you're not you're falling into partisan alignments. You're aligned with the gospel and the values of Catholic social teaching and trying to bring that to bear. And as a bishop, I know we're all appreciative of what you do for us. So lots of things. And, you know, we're not going to be able to cover the whole playing field, but things changing week to week, day to day. But this whole movement of parental choice in education, we think about one area where maybe the church is pro-choice, among others. You know, we believe in human freedom and that we have a way of delivering on our mission. What are some things going on there that were realized and things that maybe were frustrated?
Yeah, I think that this is going to be an ongoing discussion for the rest of the session. I mean, the session, you know, probably has another 4 or 5 weeks left to it. And I think this is going to be an ongoing discussion. One thing we're very happy with that is moving is the legislature is looking at doubling the tuition and textbook tax credit for parents. And that's available, that tax credit is available for public and non-public school parents. And they're looking at moving it to, you know, 25% of the first $2,000 in expenses. So in effect, if you go to a Catholic school, that would probably, per child, your tax credit would probably go from $250 to $500.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a good thing. You know, that's helpful.
Especially if families have multiple children, you know, more than one child, that's serious money. So,
yeah, no, that can add up. And so there are some other things going on, I think, that are good for parents and helping them, you know, live out their role as a primary educator. One thing they're doing is making it easier for students to transfer from one school district to another. And I think that's good for some parents and their students. They're looking at some charter school proposals, which can also be good choices. They're public schools, you know, publicly funded and public schools, but they do can take a different tack and maybe a little less following the strictest curriculum, but can do some other good things.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's something they're talking about.
They're kind of, in some ways, kind of laboratories, if you will, of experimenting with different pedagogies and creating a microculture, if you will, for the students who would particularly flourish in that kind of environment. Is that right? But
no, you have it exactly right.
And yet, with the charter schools, would they, I mean, whereas Catholic schools, we can automatically assume that they're following the guidelines for curriculum and everything else by the Iowa Department of Education. Do they get a little more latitude sometimes in charter schools on that front?
Yeah, I think so. The whole purpose is that they would have to make their case to the State Department of Education and say, this would be our instructional plan. And it really doesn't have to follow exactly what the normal, you know, guidelines are that the state puts out there. So like you see in many states and Minnesota, you know, in particular, I'm thinking of, you know, they sometimes charter schools will focus on a particular line of education. It might be a classical education, you know, and things like that. And so that's why I say that can be some good option for parents. Our concern is, you know, we don't want to open up a bunch of charter schools in Iowa. And then, you know, that looks like it could be a very good option for parents who are paying tuition. But people also need to understand that these are not religious schools either, you know, and they can't teach religion. And so they're just it's a good option, you know. Mm-hmm. And so one thing we've really been working hard on is to get a scholarship plan, an education savings account plan into the bill. There are proposals to do that. The governor's bill is still alive in the House. And so I would anticipate that we will definitely see some further efforts to get that done, at least in a small way. And it's good to get a program started and in place that would help some current parents.
That'd be a tremendous boost. As we think about people's continuing to weather the effects of the pandemic and employment and other things, and how the Iowa Catholic Conference wants to lobby for and against those things that would not only help families flourish, but individuals as well. We've got issues with SF 492 and HF 754, which would cut unemployment insurance for bigger families and institute a one-week waiting period for benefits. Is that correct? What's the motivation for those bills, and why would we oppose it?
Well, sometimes it's not about what you're for, but it's what you're trying to stop. And what you said on the unemployment insurance piece is we're trying to stop those bills. I think the rationale is to try to save the state's unemployment trust fund some money. And so business interests are for that because they don't want to pay as much in unemployment insurance. We're opposing it because the bills actually would go back. Iowa's one of about a dozen states that has bigger unemployment benefits for bigger families. And we don't think we should change that. That's not a bug. That's a good feature. So we're trying to keep that. And then the other piece is right now it would put into place, the bill would put into place a one-week waiting period before people could receive benefits. And that particularly, I would say, affects some of the trade union people when they, lose opportunities, the job is done and things like that. But if you look at the fiscal note for the bill, that would save the trust fund about $20 million. Well, on the flip side of that, that's $20 million that really could have gone to people who are unemployed through no fault of their own. And so that's why we're opposing that. And I'm crossing my fingers. It looks like maybe that that bill will not be brought up. And so we're hoping we'll be successful on that.
Okay, as we look at individuals, I mean, however many children they have, I mean, mouths have to be fed, and people who are, even 1 week can impose a great hardship on people. So a very good rationale, and, that money, and, money that people have paid into unemployment insurance, too, so that they're not drawing from something that they haven't been a participant in supporting along the way. We think also about the kind of psychic costs that people are bearing, and we think mm-hmm. about the increase in mental health services provided by telehealth, in contrast to the kind of in-person services, certainly boosts our rural areas in their access to these supportive services. HF 294 is asking insurance companies to compensate at the same rate, and our own Catholic Charities is very involved in telehealth and hopes to expand their outreach in that way. Can you comment on that bill, please?
This is a bill that actually has been passed by the House and is now up for consideration in the Senate, which would require insurance companies to pay the same rate for mental health services that are provided by telehealth as in person. And I think Catholic Charities across the state have done a really good job of pivoting, to telehealth, kind of like the Catholic schools did right away. So did Catholic Charities. And so they're providing some counseling services from telehealth. And right now they're getting reimbursed at the same rate, but there's no requirement for that once we get through the pandemic. And so there is legislation, and the purpose of the legislation, according to the people who are behind it, is really to make sure those services can stay in place for rural areas. Because, rather than having someone drive to Des Moines or, Waterloo for services, if they can be in their own home and receive those services, that's a good thing. And so we're hoping to get that bill out of the Senate. I think there's discussion with the insurance companies who are, dragging their feet, and they'd rather just arrive at that own conclusion, of their own accord. And so there are discussions going on with that. But I think Catholic Charities, certainly supports the bill. And I think we all do, because I think it's going to be helpful.
Well, let's get granular with that for a moment then. I mean, I read the op-ed several weeks ago by a representative of the insurance company say, trust the market. Let us figure this out. I mean, we have patients' interests at stake. Obviously, they also have some few other interests at stake, but that maybe telehealth need not always be compensated. And I don't know if they were implying mm-hmm. that it'd be a disincentive, that there would be judicious use, but not excessive views of telehealth. Can you speak to that? We don't want to impute bad motives, but just why would one want to not compensate on the same besides saving money?
Well, I think there's some legislators are saying that, well, we'd like to see some data on this first. Well, it's going to provide some, it's going to have to take some time to get data on telehealth and what its efficacy rate is, perhaps to compared in person. Mm-hmm. I'm sure those studies will take place, but we're not going to have that today. Mm-hmm. And it seems clear that it's serving people, And it goes back to, you know, sometimes we've had the same discussion about the minimum wage, you know, let the market handle it. Well, if there was not a minimum wage, there's no question in some parts of the state the wage would go down. I mean, that's not even common sense, you know, to say that that wouldn't happen. Some people will pay only what they can literally get away with paying with. And I'm not saying the insurance companies are that way with this. But at some point, that's the reason you have legislation, is to make sure there are some minimum standards. And so I know that that discussion is a very active discussion at the Capitol.
I can only imagine. Within the realm of health care and things, the House legislation to allow for over-the-counter access to contraceptives that impinges upon the physician-patient relationship and as a prescription medication, obviously the contraceptive intent for some, any other, you know, kind of therapeutic uses that are there, all of those would be reasons why just simply allowing over-the-counter access is problematic from a Catholic perspective. Can you comment on that, please?
Yeah, well, this bill would put out a standing order statewide, and it would allow for over-the-counter access to that after filling out a questionnaire. You know, our perspective is, if you want to look at this for women's health, this is a bipartisan issue in that you'll hear some Democrats as well as Republicans talk about, you know, these drugs have a very serious effect on a woman. And the fact that you would give this with kind of a questionnaire, you know, sometimes people don't fill out questionnaires accurately, or they don't remember what the other medication they're on. Gosh, I know that for myself sometimes. You know, what am I taking, you know, when I'm filling out this questionnaire? And so any prescription medicine carries some risks, which is why they really should have a prescription. And we think this legislation would undercut the physician and patient relationship, you know, making sure that the physician is there to assess the patient's risk. But, you know, and I think this is one of those bills. I think we've been successful so far in holding that off from debate on the floor at the Capitol, and so we're going to keep working on that.
Who would be among the lobbyists for this? Would it be Planned Parenthood or other organizations like that, or other interests?
Yeah, certainly Planned Parenthood would be supportive of it. Some women's groups like that.
I'm going to ask you to pause here, and then if you'll remain with us, we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to Making It Personal with Bishop Johnson on the Iowa Catholic Radio and Spirit Catholic Radio Network.
Support for Iowa Catholic Radio and Catholic Women Now provided in part by Permar Security, providing security solutions for homes and businesses since 1953. Permar Security is a Catholic-owned family business supplying security systems, access control systems, video surveillance, fire alarm systems, and video doorbells. All alarm systems are monitored out of their monitoring center located in the state of Iowa. Permar Security, 515-244-5660, permarsecurity.com.
Thank you, Dental Associates, for underwriting Dowling Catholic Sports 365. With over 40 years' experience, Dental Associates is a group dental practice with the mission of promoting optimum health and well-being to all patients, providing preventative, restorative, and cosmetic dentistry for the entire family. Message underwritten by Dr. Kenton Gleichman, Dr. Steve Karbaka, and Dr. Ben Nagel. Dental Associates, addressing your smile, needs, and dreams. Online at DesMoines-DentalAssociates.com.
Welcome back. This is Making It Personal with Bishop William Johnson. We're continuing to visit with Tom Chapman, Executive Director of the Iowa Catholic Conference, as we kind of look at all things legislative unfolding in our time. Last year, the proposal for the abortion constitutional amendment, saying the Constitution of Iowa is neutral with regard, neither proscribing or prescribing abortion, as was found by the Iowa Supreme Court. How are we doing in that quarter?
Well, I think it's still moving forward in the sense that it passed the House. It's still up for consideration in the Senate. I know that there are going to be some meetings taking place and already have taken place in the Senate. There is just a little bit of difference between the Senate version and the House version. Our perspective is that both versions would work. I think, you know, the Senate version was also tested in some polling and seemed to test better. So, you know, our thing is, I think the message is going to be, you guys have got to get something done on this issue and pass this, because the Supreme Court found abortion to be a fundamental right in Iowa. And so that's all we're trying to fix, is just to say that the Constitution does not say that abortion is a fundamental right. So it would leave the field open for some reasonable regulations on that. And so we're going to be moving to encourage legislators to keep that moving forward. And then after the next election, we'll have to come back and do it again. It's kind of a long-term thing, but we're going to keep working on it.
And then, of course, the people of Iowa would ultimately have the last say on this, right? It would go out, if it passes again, and it goes out to the people of Iowa to vote on the constitutional amendment.
Yep, correct. Yeah. If things go well, it'll be on the ballot in the fall of 2024. And then the people of Iowa can say whether they want to have that amendment or not. So in that sense, you know, one of the things we talk to legislators about is really you're just giving the people of Iowa a choice whether to pass this or not. And then, you know, they'll get to make the final decision.
Yeah, and there'd be nothing to be afraid of if the people, you know, under the rule of law can speak. So thank you for framing that better than I set it up on my question to you, Tom. You did
a better job.
You turned my question into a better question. Thank you. So we noticed, even though the Republicans have the you know, the governor's office and both houses, the Governor Reynolds' support of anti-racial profiling legislation was not received. There were certain laws passed that are protecting our law enforcement people with whom we have great respect, but also at the same time ensuring just application of those laws. And so there was some tension there, even within the Republican side.
Yeah, I think there definitely was. This is something that the Iowa Catholic Conference has been working on for several years, and without a whole lot of success in terms of the racial profiling piece. I think there's more support for it probably in the Iowa House than the Iowa Senate. And their political realities are, there's just not support in the Iowa Senate to get it passed. I mean, I know the governor did some work on that, and some people think she should have done more. But my view of it in talking to legislators, it's just not a going concern right now. So that's where we're at. It's disappointing in that sense and something that we've worked on. I don't think there's enough support to pass the constitutional amendment, which would allow for people coming out of prison after felonies to vote. I don't think there's support to get that on the ballot yet either. And so right now on that issue, the governor has issued an executive order which allows those folks to vote, and we're very supportive of at least doing that. So it's one of those things. We've spent more time on this trying to educate people the past few years. I think there'll be some more education done on it, and the time will be right at some point, but I just don't think it's right now.
Okay. Well, and, you know, to have the actually passed into law rather than relying on the whoever's occupying the governor's office and executive orders, kind of concentrating power in that way. So we're limited about 30 seconds here, you know, continue to try and advance restorative justice. Any comments about a probation system? And you'd have to give me the short version here, Tom, before we wrap it up.
Yeah, there is a bill that is working to make it easier for people to become successful when they come out of prison. Catholic Charities does have some reentry programs in different parts of the state. This people can get credits for, you know, on good behavior to get off of probation quicker. And so we look at that as kind of living out our principles of restorative justice.
Well, to bring people back into community and ultimately into communion. Tom, always enlightening to be with you. Holy Week blessings to you and Paulette as you've been listening to Making It Personal with Bishop Jones on Iowa Catholic Radio and the Spirit Catholic Radio Network.
You can hear Making It Personal with Bishop William Jones every week on Iowa Catholic Radio and iowacatholicradio.com.